Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. This will be the second part of our Q&A series. Very much hope you guys enjoy this. Want to thank our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce, for being a title sponsor of ours for the third year going now. This was a lot of fun for Bud and I to do. Hope you're able to enjoy these, and thank you as always for the listen, and we will be back with a new Nolecast soon.
All right, we have a twofer here, and they're not really FSU specific, but they are football specific here. It's late summer, and you guys need content. We agree. Number one, why do college players, aside from Gator quarterbacks, seldom fail drug tests for PEDs? The temptation seems to be there, and some guys have huge gains in a short amount of time. I would expect more positive tests. Why not?
I like that you didn't let this gentleman slander one of my favorite players there, but
I saw that note that he included, and we're not going to include that on the air. I'm not trying to get sued. Although I think he does bring up an interesting case of a guy putting on 30 pounds in an offseason.
Nobody besmirches my man from a certain hard hitter from the Northeast that we had recently. The temptations seem to be there. Yeah, they're certainly there. I mean, I think that a lot more kids use and get away with it. I think there's a little bit of a schedule when it comes to testing, and I think that if you want to maybe try to add that extra couple miles an hour to your fastball, to use a baseball reference, I think more do that than people realize.
So there's competing thoughts in this. First of all, I agree with what you said. The other thing is, like, a lot of times these kids cannot afford, like, the designer steroids, which are less likely to be detected. So if the kids were using the stuff they were using and they were in the NFL, I think they would get popped a lot more often. But I don't think the NCAA's testing is quite like the NFL's. And schools, I don't think, are testing for it quite like the NFL does. So that's probably your answer there on the first one. Number two, no one in the NFL has ever been flagged or has even been flagged for unauthorized compensation, despite there being incentives for teams to pay under the table, like college. Example, why couldn't Robert Kraft, that's the guy that has the Patriots, he's the owner of the Patriots, pay a tight end 85% of his market salary through regular means and then make the player whole through contributions to his nonprofit, buying his business, etc. The team gets to keep the cap space and the player gets paid immediately. It seems like a win-win. I only ask because it seems like some pro teams are willing to cheat and comp structure works in college. Maybe they're just good at it and it happens and we don't know about it.
That I could believe. I was really, really young when I remember this, but didn't Wayne Huizenga maybe try to do something like this with Dan Marino and Blockbuster Videos or something like that? Let me look. I seem to have some vague memory in my mind about this.
I'm 100% sure that the 49ers did this in the 90s, actually. I'm just going to send out a tweet. Didn't the 49ers get in trouble in the 90s for outside of a contract? This is the best thing about having 57,000 Twitter followers, by the way, is you can treat them as like your own personal Google. I mean, by far, it's great. In the meantime, while I wait for somebody, have you seen the beer called Natty Daddy?
Yes, I have.
I have not seen that. I am very glad that did not exist when I was in college. I was in
that would have been a possible nuclear bomb had I been in college and that thing had existed. 8% with a natty in your hand, that could I imagine that things could get sideways there.
Exactly. Compensation. Yes. Okay, here we go. This is kind of related. Cleveland Browns president Carmen Policy and team vice president Dwight Clark agreed to pay $600,000 today for violating NFL salary cap while with the 49ers. The settlement calls for Policy to pay $400,000 and Clark $200,000. The principal issues involved provisions included in quarterback Jim Druckenmiller's, this was the 90s, rookie contract. Damn, I'm good. I was like 7 years old when this happened. How in the hell did I remember this? Deal signed by linebacker Lee Woodall and tight end Brent Jones and allegations of an undisclosed agreement involving quarterback Steve Young. Although there are many legal and factual differences of opinion over many of the issues, everyone concerned with the matter agrees that the settlement is in the best interest of everyone involved, including the NFL, the guy said in a statement. Also, you can be suspended for up to 1 year and your club can be fined $2 or $3 million. This is back in the 90s. If you do undisclosed agreements or payments, you can also fine individual club personnel. Also, the Timberwolves lost five number one picks. and were fined $3.5 million for violating the NBA salary cap. That is incredible. 5 first round picks. Did they suck for a long time after that? Because that's a lot of first round picks.
What was the period of time?
Looks like this was in the 90s. I think this was the late 90s, actually. So this would be like 99-ish. Man, okay, awesome. Thank you, reader. MD Knight 2016. Yes, he hit me with the link. Yeah, it was 1999, but I don't know when the Timberwolves got that taken away. Oh, salary cap scandal. That's probably the one I want to click on. Oh, it was Joe Smith. Joe Smith had an illegal contract? Or wait, no, I can't. Yeah, I guess the Timberwolves did it before the 1999 lockout shortened season. Wow, the Timberwolves' first-round picks between like 01 and 05 were forfeited. They really could have been a lot better with Garnett if they did not lose their first-round picks for 5 years in a row, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's probably limiting. My favorite soccer team in Europe had this scheme where they were pumping a lot of players' salaries into EBTs, what are employee benefit trust. Did that for a series of years and then got caught doing it. And the tax bill that was levied upon them that was due immediately ended up actually forcing the team into what they call liquidation or what we would call bankruptcy. So this, I think this does happen probably more than people realize, or at least is perhaps still happening to some degree. But as you mentioned at the top, if you're doing this effectively, it's not something that ever becomes a story.
Ingram, what is your favorite soccer team?
It is the Glasgow Rangers. It's a team out of Scotland.
They don't play in kilts, right?
Never seen them do that. Never seen them try it.
My favorite soccer team is now Celtic.
No, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people want us to disagree more, so now I am adopting your favorite rival, or your favorite team's rival. So now we have like organic disagreement on the show. Is it Celtic or Celtic?
It's Celtic, but you're still a cheeky individual nonetheless.
All right.
So I look forward
I'm going to adopt them. I've been a fan since 1887, 130 years ago when Celtic was founded.
Impressive.
Celtic.
Yeah. All right. Well,
got it.
I'll have to tell you some things about that club off air.
I appreciate that.
See if you keep your opinion of them.
Oh, anyway, do they have some scandal?
There's one in particular. Yeah.
Oh, I reserve the right to change my mind. Between now and the time this show comes,
neither clubs can claim to be perfect. I'll put it that way.
All right, let's move on to the next question. It is far enough soccer talk for one show, fellas. As we navigate yearly football season drought, I recently decided to watch a few throwback FSU classics to help pass the time, particularly the 03 FSU versus Miami game. God, that was a bad game. Watching Chris Wicks, quote-unquote, perform in the game and subsequently reflecting on his career, I got to thinking of a hypothetical situation.
Man, we have had some hypotheticals tonight. Impressive.
We've saved up a lot of these, though. Like, this is peak off-season. Like, we're like that farmer that stores his grain until the price gets,
emptying out the silo tonight. Yeah,
We could have burned these prior, but we did not. Here's the situation. The year is 2017. The FSU's playing Alabama. Your starting quarterback, DeAndre Francois, goes down with a knee injury. You look at your back quarterback options, and you may choose only one that will lead them to the rest of the season. Quarterback options. Freshman, James Blackman. Redshirt sophomore, Xavier Lee. Redshirt junior, Sean McGuire. Or senior, Chris Ricks. I assume we still have Jimbo here, right?
Yeah, I think that has to be assumed.
For this given scenario, we'll say the 2017 coaching staff is not checked out. Ooh, this is a big twist. And is fully committed the entire season to winning as many games as possible. The rest of the roster is that of the 2017 roster. And whichever quarterback that you choose will be injury-free for the entire year. Who are you rolling with? Thank you, guys, and I always want to support your sponsors. P.S. I recently made the move from Greenville, South Carolina, to Houston, Texas. Clemson to Aggieland. Go figure.
Can we assume that the player is as committed as the staff in this question?
Ooh, because if so, I know where you're going with this, and I'm totally going to the same spot. It's got to be Xavier Lee because of the clause in there that says the player will be without injury for the entire year. And Jimbo was not afraid to run Xavier Lee when they got in trouble.
Xavier Lee would have been picking up quite a few carries.
Yes. So I'm going to go with X Lee here. So the thing is, in the absence of consistency and stability, which none of these guys actually had, like remember the whole narrative because he was white that people thought McGuire was like super stable and we were like, he's actually kind of a gunslinger, you know?
Game manager, than stable. I wasn't sure exactly what you were referencing at the beginning there, but
Not like mentally unstable, but like, you know, a steadying hand, which he wasn't necessarily. In the absence of game management ability here, I'm going to go with the highest upside, and since injuries have been turned off for this hypothetical, it's got to be X-Man.
Yeah, I think that's the play when it comes to those four. But interesting, and yeah, man, I understand the original part of that question. Chris Ricks was so damn maddening. There'd be games where you think he could be one of the better players at quarterback, and then be games where you would threaten ill will on anybody that decided that he should ever play quarterback for Florida State again. So interesting little walk in time there.
Also, like, we can't totally blame Ricks for that game, in my opinion. How many deep balls can you call in a damn rainstorm? That was pouring down rain. You let Walter Payton's son, who wasn't any good at all, run through you eventually because you kept giving him the ball back and your defense got tired. That game still bugs me. That was stupid. All right, next question. Oh, we got a three-part question, which we agreed to take because this guy said he sent these in earlier and we told him we would answer them, and we did not. So that's bad on us. Apologies. Number one, no one is talking about our defensive line at all. I know it's not really comparable to Clemson, but with it being Burns bag season, which I guess is like, you know, pro season, veteran play from Christmas, and two other former five stars in Big Marv and Kando, don't you think they should produce some great plays? Yeah. I mean, don't you? I think they're going to be really good. That's one of the strengths of the defense and of the team.
I think we've said for forever that you've got a really elite defensive sandwich when it comes to the two pieces of bread. It's what's in the middle that ultimately is going to determine what your season, well, maybe not determine what your season looks like, but what type of linebacker play is the ingredient that we're not real sure of and have the most questions about. But what you are up front and what you are with some of the younger members of the secondary, it's a really nice defense. So, no, I don't think anybody's sleeping on it. I mean, he kind of, I don't know if he answers his own question, but he certainly, it's just tough for anybody in this conference to rave about their defensive line when you look at what the team in the upstate part of South Carolina has, and the just what three either first or second team All-Americans. That's just absurd, absolute absurd.
It might be a top five defensive line in the nation if we assume Clemson 1, Ohio State, Bama 2-3 in some order, and then I think 4-5-6 in some order is probably Florida State, Michigan, Auburn, depending on who you like best. But I think they could be in that 4-6 range. I don't think that's crazy.
How many freshman wide receivers do you actually see getting playing time? I like Harrison's speed, Young athleticism, and Thompson's length. But with some of the other receivers stepping up, I'm not sure how much they'll play.
I think that they are going to have... Do you think every freshman receiver will get a catch?
Yes, I do.
I do, too.
I think Harrison's going to be... They're going to try to do all they can to make Harrison a focal point in the offense. I think you're very much going to see some freshman receivers getting some real significant, meaningful playing time. Third question, with the recent commitments of two more four-stars, do you see any of the many four-star commits that we have rising to a five-star after their senior season?
All right, let me pull up FSU's. As you know, I don't really care about the star rankings at this time in the season because there's still a lot of kids out there who are, you know, weirdly rated. So let me look. Keem Dent is already a five-star. No, I don't think anybody else has five-star potential.
I wouldn't say there's anybody that has even a remote chance, really. I mean, Hal is probably your best chance, and we've discussed that we don't see Hal being ever evaluated as a five-star quarterback.
He's the most likely to get a five-star bump simply because the rating services usually like to have five-star quarterbacks, even if they don't necessarily deserve it, which I don't think anybody deserves five stars this year at the quarterback position. So, no, I don't think anybody's going to get a bump to five stars. I have a disconnect on what a football-only facility really means and what it would look like for FSU. By that, I mean FSU has an indoor and outdoor practice facility. That's true. They're very nice. The Moore Center, the players' dorms, locker rooms, and a cafeteria at Doak. Coaches' offices, etc. Where does a football-only facility fit into the equation? Well, look, they want more meeting rooms. They want nicer meeting rooms. They want hangout space. They want to have the football be football-only so that it's just focused on football like 24/7. Your football tutoring or you, like your academic stuff can be in that building. Your meals could be in that building. They want to have separate rooms. Like they want to have a DB room and a linebacker room and all that stuff. Right now they share a lot of those rooms. They don't want to have to share other facilities with other sports. You know, the workout facility could also be in a football only facility. Most of it is, to be honest, for efficiency, but also just to compete against what other programs have. Like, for instance, Alabama. Have you seen this thing that they put out today? Their new 25,000 square foot fuel center and smoothie bar.
Yeah.
5 performance chefs, 4 dietitians, upstairs patio dining overlooking the practice fields, 50 HDTVs. Our new sports and nutrition facility will be open soon. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. They have like an omelet bar and all this other stuff they're showing being made. A lot of guys smiling. Whole lot of smiling going on in this. A lot of to-go plates are being taken. Looks like the Alabama, the one guy has like 3 tuna steaks on his plate. That's pretty impressive. He must be on the gain table, not the loser maintain table. Anyway, that's pretty silly. But a lot of it's just, hey, this place has this. It's super nice, and we want to compete with that, basically, because kids like flashy stuff. A lot of it is flash. Not there's no substance behind it, but there's a decent amount of flash that goes into this. A
lot of flash. A lot of kids just want to put stuff on Instagram or whatever else. It's just about having, you don't necessarily have to have the newest and brightest thing, but I don't think you can be like woefully behind the teams that you're trying to compete with either. So everybody everybody's sinking massive amounts of money. Georgia Tech is not a school that necessarily values athletics in the manner that maybe they have in their house. Georgia Tech just announced like a $130 million project that's a purely an athletic facility campaign. It's just not something that's going away, and it's always going to be something that you're going to have to contend with. So, yeah, there is the logistical issues that Bud mentioned, but really it's just an effort to have, I don't want to say control over these kids, but to be able to have them in one particular area, limit the distractions, limit some of the situations where you can have idle minds turn or go south. It's really about just trying to keep up with those that you're competing against to play at the highest level.
All right, buy or sell. FSU lands a top 25 recruit who, as of today, has little to no momentum towards FSU, a surprise big get. Top 25 recruit. I was really thinking I was going to say sell on this, but there's enough kids here who they're on the fringe with and have expressed interest in visiting that I might think about buying. I'm still going to sell, but I got to tell you that my decision to sell is a little bit harder now because like they think they're going to get a visit from Brew McCoy, the stud out of Modern Day. They think they're going to get a visit from N'Kobe Dean. I'm a little skeptical on that. Crouch, the linebacker who's friends with Hal in North Carolina, they think they're going to get another visit from him. Trey Sanders, I think they're on the outside looking in a little bit, but I think they're still in it. Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't count as coming from out of nowhere because you're already in it with him. But with those other 4 guys, I think they, you know, maybe I'm still going to say no, but it's not impossible. Michael Johnson Jr., better quarterback than Sam Howell as a prospect. Hard sell on that. I got to see both of them throw. Not a chance. Any disagreement on that?
No, none.
In the light of the downturn in recruiting and recent announcement of Mike Martin's retirement after the 2019 season, buy or sell the idea that FSU's streak of consecutive 40-plus win seasons is snapped before a new coach's second season, which would be 2021. So basically the question, buy or sell that FSU will continue to win 40-plus games in 2019 and 2020?
I think I'll probably buy that. Curious as to how much... Man, I don't know. This one's tough. I'm gonna completely flip that. I'm going to sell that idea and think that Florida State's newest coach will be able to continue that for 2 more years.
I'm right there with you, actually. But that's fine. Buy or sell, a member of the football team plays baseball next season as a 2-sport star for FSU.
Why don't we open that up to, unless there's one particular prospect that I'm not familiar with, We may open that up to all sports, I guess. I don't know.
I'm still going to sell. I don't think anybody would be a two sports star.
No, nobody's a basketball player either. I don't see it. I don't see who that would be.
Over, under, I guess. Somebody snuck this in to buy or sell for us. 2.5 wins this year against the following. Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Miami, and UF. I will go under. I think they'll go 2-2 against that group.
This year, I'll take 3. I'll take 3, sure.
Okay.
I will say that Florida State picks up 3 out of those 4.
All right, and then buy or sell more than one team in Florida with a top 10 recruiting class. Where is Miami right now?
Aren't they right pretty much paired with Florida State?
Yeah, 12. They're at 12 and 13, respectively. I'll buy. I think that they can both get in the top 10. Florida right now, I think, would need some work. They are down in that whole 32 range. You want to know who Florida's neighbors are as of this recording in recruiting?
I'd love to, yeah.
All right, I got Iowa, Oklahoma State, Northwestern, and Pitt. Those are the 4 teams in front of them.
That's a lot of recruiting powers down there. Absolutely.
Oh, and Virginia. Yeah. Like UVA. That's curious.
Butter Ingram, will either of you be joining the Campbell Hive? We could use more members willing to spread the gospel of one George Campbell for the 2018 season.
Look, for jinx purposes, I don't think we talk about that person on this podcast until he does something on the field. Isn't that the rule?
I think we broke it. I think we said he accomplished something last year that
was... Oh, that's right. That's right.
Up okay. The level that we'd be speaking of him moving forward. And I, for the life of me, can't remember what that was, but I do remember saying something.
Are you going to join the Campbell Hive?
I would love to think that George Campbell performs at a level where we talk about him every week. I can't see that happening at this point in time, though.
Look, if you let me be a fall rushy, then maybe. I'm not going to rush the Campbell Hive in summer until I can see that he can be healthy through fall camp. Sorry. Where does FSU land on the fully committed scale? With Georgia being a Louisiana hot sauce 10 and Vandy / USF being a cold 1, I'm curious how successful FSU's, quote, fully committed department is. Love to hear you guys bring your thoughts to the for the table. Oh, man, that is loaded with sponsors.
Brilliant. I might say USF's more like a 2.5, a 3 or something. I'm not sure I'd put them on a 1. Georgia's is a 10. I would say that. I'd say that they have not backed off being a 10 at all. If anything, they may be more committed to it now than they were 6 months ago. Some of the stories I hear about Georgia are just like, whew, we are doing some things. I would say Florida State's probably about a 7.5, somewhere in that area when it comes to this.
I would agree. I think anytime you have new coaching changeover, you have to figure out who you need to know, you know, for that type of stuff too. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves as the time goes by.
Is there a history of special teams improvement under Coach Hampton?
I have no idea. So I'm going to highlight this one, and we will try to answer this in a next show.
I tried to look this up today for what it's worth. I'll wait and look again, but this is not the easiest thing to track. And
it's really not.
Not a whole lot of information surrounding it, so...
Not really an FSU question, but what are the odds that if one of the Clemson defensive linemen blows out an ACL in the first few weeks that the rest of the guys shut it down? Probably not very high, because I'm guessing they all have insurance policies.
I'm sure they probably contracted through Lloyd's of London for some type of insurance. I don't know. I mean, shut it down as in not play anymore? I don't think the odds are anything there. Shut it down as maybe having something in the back of their mind or having concerns. I don't know. You might see that out of one of the players or... But I don't think, I mean, if you, this is tough. I think of those guys that decided to return, they all drank the Clemson water and loved that program. And I think that more likely than not, you'd continue to see a pretty high level of play.
They're bus riders, man.
Yeah, they do love, they're fully on the bus. Absolutely.
Was hoping to have my question answered. What happens when someone is medically disqualified? Thought I saw Lorenzo Featherston at Pro Day. Are they still part of the program / family? So, actually they are. They continue to go to class. They can be around workouts and all that stuff. They just can't play, and they don't take up a spot on the roster. But they don't have to stay around the program. Like, some guys get medically DQ'd and don't hang around as much anymore. Some guys are still all hanging around. That mostly, I think, has to do with how much they still want to be involved in the program. Like, do they want to become future coaches or trainers? And who are their friends, right? If it's a third-year guy and he gets medically disqualified, most of his friends are probably players, so he's going to still hang around the team as he finishes out his college career. Some guys, maybe not. Maybe some guys want to go elsewhere and kind of start a new thing. For some, it might be kind of painful to be around the team and to think about the opportunity that was taken away from them by injury.
But the next question to ask is, who has a bigger impact on 2018, Tomorian Terry or Keith Gavin?
A bigger impact on 2018. I'm going to say Terry, man, just because of the long speed that he has on the outside. I think it's got to be Terry. I like Keith. I want to see Keith succeed. But because of the speed, I think it's going to be Terry.
I tend to agree. I think I feel fairly confident about what you get out of Terry in the long term. I think probably the better thing for the program might be if this question is Gavin. But I think with the style of play and the style of offense that I probably agree with you towards leaning towards Terry.
All right. Have Taggart's offenses struggled in third and short or fourth and short situations? I'm concerned with the running the ball out of the gun in those situations. Yes, this is the question I wanted to get to. I've got a good answer for this. The answer is no, actually. Now, here's the thing. A couple things you got to realize about this. Pretty much everybody in college football now runs from out of the shotgun. In fact, some of your best short yardage teams run from the gun. Why does it work? A lot of it is because the defense has to respect the quarterback run and they cannot completely sell out against the running back. I'm going to pull up footballstudyhall.com here. Number one we see is that teams do bounce around a lot in terms of their success rate in short yardage. But there's something called power success rate, which measures teams on first and goal, second and goal, third and goal from like the two or in, third and short, and fourth and short, basically, which is it's a great number. Do you know who runs from the gun exclusively and like never gets under center, Ingram? Ohio State. Last year, they were 21st in power success rate from the gun. Previous year, you want to take a shot at what their power success rate was in 2016? Second in the nation.
Wow, I wouldn't have guessed that high. No, I would have guessed maybe 15th or something like that. Impressive. Very impressive.
In 2015, 7th in the nation.
Okay.
Running in short yardage from the shotgun is something that old curmudgeonly announcers like to complain about. It's not actually a disadvantage, assuming that you have a quarterback with some level of mobility. If you're in the gun and you have a statue back there like a Peyton Manning. Now, Peyton Manning's not a great example because of the fact he was such a good thrower, you know, he could make up for some of the stuff. But if you have a guy back there that absolutely cannot run in short yardage, then it is easier for the defense to cue, you know, to all kind of lock in on that dude, on that running back. Everybody on FSU's roster is capable of running the zone read from a physical athleticism standpoint. They have good backs. I think they have very good guards and interior line play this year. They should be fine on short yardage. It's not a thing. Like, this is only a concern of FSU fans, really, because they have been in such an old-style offense for so long. All these other fans, they got over this in, like, 2010, right? You don't hear this discussed on broadcasts as much anymore. You will hear it from FSU fans this year because they're not used to it. Every time FSU doesn't get a short yardage thing, you know, they're going to be, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Here's another one. You know what team's in the gun all the time? Auburn. What's their power success rate this year? 5th in the nation. Oklahoma was terrible in power success rate. 102nd. That's pretty wild. They had a great offensive line. Wonder if they try to do some weird stuff there. Oh, another team that basically never, ever gets under center. Clemson. 71.4% their conversion. 38th in the nation. Anyway, guys, I'm just telling you, get over that. That's not a thing that people worry about anymore in college. In the pros, I can hear it because you don't run your quarterback very much, and a lot of those quarterbacks are not that mobile. In college, it's just not. Alabama was 16th. They are also almost exclusively a shotgun team now. So, just something to think about there.
Next question here is, Zakondre White, convert to wide receiver this season?
Nope, I don't think it's going to happen at all. That's message board nonsense.
Do you think LeBourne beats Patrick for the number two spot?
Maybe so, yeah. But I'm not confident in that, but I think it's definitely a possibility. A definite possibility.
I do too. I think it's a possibility. I also think that there may be different uses for each player depending upon the... Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Patrick has more situational deployment and how he's used in maybe the first and the fourth quarter. So that might fluctuate slightly throughout the course of the game as well. Is there any truth to the rumor that Mullen is allegedly struggling in recruiting due to the snitch claim regarding the Ole Miss investigation?
No, I think it's hilarious, but no, I don't think it has anything to do with
it. Maybe it was from the same person, but we had a variation of this question asked to us like three or four times. So just curious that that seems to be out there as much as it is. But
watch Foul Play paid Mississippi on Verizon Go 90. It supports Stephen Godfrey of ESPN. Also, I'm in the documentary a couple times, so that's kind of cool.
Bud is a frequent contributor in that. How is the strength and conditioning program coming along so far? Any hydration concerns with a new up-tempo offense?
I could tell you that some of these freshmen who came in too heavy are getting their butts kicked. I think that they are going to be a lot stronger. I think you're going to focus on physical strength more for some of these short yardage situations, much like the commenter or the questioner early had asked. And I think it's going really well. And I was at a speaking event the other day at an FSU booster club, and somebody asked me a similar question. I said, look, I don't think that the philosophies necessarily are all that different from the old staff to the new staff as far as strength and conditioning. However, what is different from the last year or two and this year is the buy-in. And as with any diet or any strength, you know, any exercise regimen, it's really about buy-in. It's will you do it? Will you stick with it? Will you be compliant? The same thing goes for college football conditioning. If you don't have guys skipping, you're going to have a better team. So far, I've heard they've had really good attendance, so that's very good. Also, I've actually heard recently, and this is unrelated, but I heard from some professors that I was talking to when last time I was up in Tallahassee, and they were just telling me a noticeable change in terms of attitude and engagement of the players in their classes. And I got to tell you, man, not that this happens, but if you need to go to your teacher or anybody for a favor, I can almost guarantee you that that person is more likely to do you a favor if you have not been a tremendous jerk throughout the year, been on your cell phone the whole time, and or skipped their class. If you actually like shown up and brought your book, right? And by the way, that counts as a missed tutoring session now. If you don't bring your supplies, you get demerits for that. That has also resulted in some attitude and course corrections for some players. Got to bring your supplies to tutoring sessions. That's key, you know? In the business world, that also applies. You can't just show up to your presentation without the presentation.
Good lesson to learn. Absolutely. Yeah. And in the business world, you waste somebody's time. That's not many times something that's forgiven. So good idea to go ahead and get it ingrained that you need to show up with everything that's necessary. So, Bud.
But it seems like guys are showing up. And we have one last question to finish on, it looks like.
One that evaded our eagle eye buy or sell filter that we put on this thing. So we will end it with a buy or sell of Clemson is looking for a new head coach before the University of Florida. Would you buy or sell that idea?
I'm going to sell. I don't buy this idea that Dabo is going to go to Alabama automatically when Nick retires. So I'm going to sell this. I think that Dabo is going to be the Bobby Bowden of Clemson.
Yeah, I mentioned that last time. But even with that assumption, do you see that job coming up in the next 3 years? I'm not sure I do. I think that this...
The Florida job, you mean?
The Clemson... Well, the Alabama job that would allow the vacancy for him to move, for him to leave Clemson.
No, I think Nick has another 5 or 6 years left at least.
Yeah, that's more. I was trying to say. I don't... There's no other job that Dabo leaves Clemson for. I'm not sure that the only job that he might leave Clemson for is going to open up in a window of time that's conducive to him moving before UF's head coach might for whatever reason. So I will sell this as well and think that there's probably an opening in Gainesville before there is Clemson.
Awesome. All right. Hey, y'all. 5 stars on iTunes if you can. Very much appreciate it. Tell your friends about us and follow us on Twitter. That's at Nolcast. You can email us thenolcast@gmail.com. As a reminder, this 2-part series was recorded on June 26th. So if anything in this is a little bit dated, apologies, but Bud is going to be, I believe Inger probably will too, actually, on a little vacation, and we will return with fresh episodes like mid-July-ish.